Today on Family Talk.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. Recently, Dr. Dobson and his wife, Shirley, took part in a special week-long celebration of the National Day of Prayer, including an historic tour of the White House and some special fellowship with a number of Christians serving in Congress. One of his colleagues in ministry, Pastor Greg Laurie of the Harvest Crusades, was also a part of the festivities in Washington, D.C. that week. Let's listen in now as Dr. Dobson reflects back on that event before welcoming his special guest, Greg Laurie, to today's Family Talk broadcast.
My wife Shirley and I just returned from Washington, D.C. for the National Day of Prayer, which was hosted this year by Mrs. Ann Graham Lotz, who succeeded Shirley. And the Lord was present throughout that evening. While in our nation's capital, I was invited to attend the dinner at the White House hosted by President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence. Some 30 pastors and evangelical leaders were also in attendance, and we are each serving as members of the White House Faith Advisory Council. Dr. Robert Jeffress, pastor of Dallas First Baptist Church, and others spoke and prayed for the nation. And Franklin Graham also shared briefly, and he said, and this is a quote, "Clearly the Lord moved the needle on election night." Now, I know that there are people listening to us who probably don't agree with that, but we were unanimous in it, I believe, and excited about it. In fact, it was an exhilarating evening. I can tell you that. Maybe this is an overstatement. I said I thought it was one of the highlights of my life being there. The president was gracious. He was charming and said he wouldn't have won without us. I think 81% of evangelicals voted for him. And he said, "This house is yours. You have access to it." Yeah, it was that kind of greeting that he gave us. He then told us that he would be signing an executive order the next morning limiting the Johnson Amendment. And I describe that in a moment. Stephen Curtis Chapman sang the Lord's Prayer. That was a highlight of the evening for me. Indeed, there was a sweet spirit in that place. As the evening winded down, and this shocked us all, the president asked if we would like to see the residence area of the White House. It's on the third floor, and I've only seen it once as a guest of President George W. Bush during one of my visits to the People's House. It is an elegant place on the third floor, as I said, and I wish every American could see it. Mr. Trump took us up the stairs to the historic rooms and displays, including the Lincoln bedroom, where his much too short bed still sits. There's a painting up there of Mr. Lincoln that I had never seen. It was his favorite, we're told. The Gettysburg Address was also on display in that room. And can you imagine a president leading a private tour? That certainly never happened to me. As indicated, the event was followed the next morning by an event in the Rose Garden to commemorate the National Day of Prayer. About 200 of our evangelical brothers and sisters were there, including my wife Shirley and Ann Graham Lotz. It was another exciting gathering in which the president signed the executive order paring back the restrictions imposed by the Johnson administration in 1954. Some people have criticized that document, and it isn't perfect. There were limitations on what the president could do, but it will be, I can tell you, much easier for churches and organizations such as Family Talk to exercise their deeply held convictions, and that's a long time coming. That afternoon, Mr. Stephen Green of Hobby Lobby gave our little group a private tour of the half-finished Bible Museum in D.C., which will open in November this year. You must see what the Greens are doing in that place in the national capital. It is huge and will be, I think, one of the most visited places in Washington in the future, because it is breathtaking and certainly will be when finished. There are other things that I can say. Let me just summarize by saying this trip was very valuable, but very tiring. We're now home trying to recover from the week. Well, that is a summary of a very special evening at the White House. I have invited a guest, a man that I love and appreciate as much as anybody in the pastorate today. And my dad was a pastor, and I guess that gives me a great love for Greg Laurie from Harvest Crusade, to join me this morning by phone to discuss his impressions. The first thing I want to do, Greg, is welcome you. And then before we talk about what I have talked about, I would like you to tell people what is going on in your ministry, because it has just gone through the roof. Somebody told me that you had an event in Dallas at Dallas, the Cowboys, I guess it's the AT&T Stadium, and packed it out and had people standing around outside. How many people were there?
Well, the venue seats 80,000, so we filled it to overflow. And I guess what's even more amazing is there were people watching around the country in what we call host sites, watching a dedicated video feed. So on that one day of last year, we were able to bring the gospel live to over 350,000 people. So it was just amazing. And we're going to do it again this year, June 11th, at the University of Phoenix Stadium. You know, we call it Harvest America, and it's a nationwide evangelistic outreach where you can come and join us in person, or you can go to our website, harvestamerica.com, and become a host site where you'll get the live video signal wherever you are, in your church, in your rented movie theater, in your front room, if you like, and be a part of this event where we call people to Christ.
Greg, your purpose is to bring people to Christ, isn't it? It's not just storytelling and interesting stuff, but you're really trying to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to as many people as possible. How do you account for that size and audience of people coming out to hear things that have been preached for many years?
Well, you know, they say if you see a turtle on a fence post, you know he didn't get there by himself. And so I would just say, you know, and I don't mean this as a cliche, but I mean it in complete truth. It's the work of the Lord. I mean, God did this. I mean, we worked hard on it. We planned for it. We prayed for it. We did all the groundwork we could. But when something sort of catches fire like that, that's not through the efforts of people. That's something that the Lord is blessing. And I also think there's a great spiritual hunger in America right now. And it's actually my opinion that most Americans have not heard the gospel presented accurately. I think a lot of Americans have maybe heard bits and pieces of preaching. They've heard the word gospel, but I question if most have really heard an accurate presentation of the gospel. And, you know, like your dad, Jim, I'm called to be an evangelist. I am a pastor, and most of the time I'm pastoring, but I do feel a call to bring the gospel to people as an evangelist.
You know, my dad had an anointing on him, too, and I sat under his ministry, and I usually was in tears while he was speaking. He was really a very effective evangelist, but he spoke to 250 to 400 people, having driven sometimes clear across the country to get to a small church. It was just a different day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a different day, but you know, when we stand before the Lord, he's not going to be so concerned about how many people we spoke to. He's going to be concerned about how faithful we were. You know, he says, well done, good and faithful servant. So I think your dad was faithful to the opportunities God provided for him, and you and I have opportunities, and we too need to be faithful. So, you know, we do live in a day where we have media like we've never had it before. We've had radio and TV for a long time, but now through social media, Facebook Live, Twitter, et cetera, I mean, we can reach a lot of people, and we can reach them in the moment. So it's a new day for communication, and one that Christians need to fully take advantage of.
Well, I have a righteous pride in what you're doing, Greg. I've watched you carefully, and you've kept your life clean. And it's just a pleasure to see what's taking place. You have another event at Angel Stadium every year, don't you? That one's that's not quite as big, but it's big.
Well, it's big, yeah. We're going to be at Angel Stadium this summer for what we call the SoCal Harvest. And this is actually, amazingly, the 27th year that we're going to be holding this event. It's going to be August 18 to 20 at the Angel Stadium. And we will have over 120,000 on an average weekend when we do this.
So, oh, my goodness.
It's pretty mind-blowing. And, you know, the unique thing about California is there's new people always coming into our state, you know, because one could wonder, well, how can they do an event in the same place for 27 years? The reason is because so many new people come every year. I'll ask the folks that are there, how many of you have never been to one of our Harvest events? And I'm telling you, two-thirds of the crowd will raise their hand. So it's a great opportunity to just keep bringing the gospel to people and calling people to Christ.
Well, I ask people to pray for these two events and the others that you are doing. Now, I wanted to get your take on what I had to say about the White House event. I didn't share that to be bragging or trying to impress people, but that was one special night, wasn't it?
It really was, Dr. Dobson, and I asked you, or Jim, sorry, you told me to call you Jim. I always default to Dr. Dobson. It's respect, but I'll call you Jim.
Okay, so please
Jim,
do.
You know, we sat at the same table, you and I. You were right next to the vice president, who is a wonderful man. And I asked you, did you ever see anything like this before? Because, of course, you were in the Reagan White House, you were in the Bush White House, as you mentioned. And you said you'd never had this kind of access before. This is unique. And, you know, how can I describe it? It was a magical evening. You walk in there, and as we wait to go into the room, there's this beautiful string section from the Marine Corps playing songs, and we just sort of mill about and talk. And then we were given an opportunity to have a photo taken with the president. And then we're taken to our table, and we sit there, and the vice president speaks, and Robert Jeffers speaks, and, of course, the president speaks. And we were told you might have 45 minutes with the president, and he ended up staying with us for 3 hours. And after our dinner was over, if that wasn't enough, the president announces, who would like to go see the Lincoln bedroom? Who doesn't want to see the Lincoln bedroom? I mean, this is like an opportunity that's so rare. We've all heard about it. And so we went in, and we're walking around, and as you described, there's President Lincoln's bed. There's his favorite portrait, which I had never seen either. It was an interesting portrait of the president. One of the things that made me laugh is President Trump said, it's really cool, huh? To hear a president say, it's really cool, huh? It was like, yeah, it was really cool. And then those portraits of the presidents and the first ladies along the hallway, and then the president takes us out to the Truman balcony, and there in the distance you see the Washington Monument, and he's taking selfies with people, and he just continues on with the conversation. I don't know if the Secret Service knew what to do. I don't think this is normal for a party this large. Seemed like there was around 40 of us to go milling about up there, but there we were with this amazing access, and I think it was proving the point that he said earlier that you raised when he told us, this is your house, and you're welcome here, and we did feel welcome.
You know, I have had the privilege of working with four presidents now, not counting this one. I don't know what the future holds there with regard to Donald Trump, but this is unique. I worked with Ronald Reagan for 5 years, but there was a certain formality to that relationship. He was not a slap on the back kind of guy, but there was something informal about that event that was charming, I felt, and he pulled all of us in.
Yes, he's very warm in person. You know, I think a lot of times people will ask me, what is he like in person? Well, he is the same guy, but there's a big difference. When we usually see the president, he is being challenged or questioned by a reporter, so he's maybe in somewhat of a defensive mode. responding to things that are said. But when he's among friends, he relaxes. And he knew he was among people that loved him and supported him. But having said that, he has opened the door for people to speak to him and share what they really think, and he's listening to them. And I think this is important because some would critique us for this. I've received criticism. I did some posts on Facebook, and people are saying, you know, don't get into politics, Greg, and they, you know, tell why they don't like President Trump, and you shouldn't be going in there. And I think what an absurd argument, because for starters, what would if Daniel had said, well, I can't go and counsel Nebuchadnezzar because I don't agree with all of his policies? Or if Joseph said, sorry, I can't interpret the Pharaoh's dreams because I'm not in agreement with everything. No, these men of God went in and they brought their influence. And when someone says we shouldn't get involved in politics, that's absurd. What, do you only want non-believers running for office? You only want non-believers making the decisions? A Christian should be involved in politics. They should be involved in culture. They should be involved in everything. We need Christian people in office. We need Christian attorneys. We need Christian artists. We need Christian actors. We need Christian bricklayers. We need Christian businessmen. We need to go out and permeate the culture, not isolate from it, but infiltrate it, living godly lives and sharing the gospel.
Greg, did you go to the event in New York City where 1,000 pastors came, and we had our first interaction with then-candidate Donald Trump? Were you there?
Yes, I was there, and I also went to the meeting in Trump Tower before, the smaller meeting in the boardroom.
And I was there, too. And I was asked that day to ask the first question of candidate Trump. And so I stood and I asked him about religious liberty. And I said, we have been bludgeoned. We've been limited. My organization, Family Talk, has been in a lawsuit with the Obama administration over the mandate that we give abortifacients, contraceptives to our staff.
Yeah.
And abortifacients can kill babies. And so I asked the first question about that. That's where the first time I heard him mention the Johnson Amendment. That was worth being there on that day to hear that commitment. And the day after you and I were there in the White House in the last week or two, was celebrated along with the National Day of Prayer in the Rose Garden. That made it worthwhile. Why wouldn't we want to do that if we have a chance to influence things for what we believe?
Absolutely. And that Rose Garden service was amazing because, just for starters, there hasn't been a celebration of the National Day of Prayer for 8 years in the White House. Now, in fairness to President Obama, he put out, you know, a decree saying we should acknowledge it, but it wasn't held in the White House, though it had been held earlier, in earlier administrations. And so I think the symbolism of that was significant. And to be out in the beauty, it was a perfect day. All the folks that were there were praying for our country. And then the president sat down and signed that document. And as you've said, you know, it's not an all-inclusive document, but what he specifically did was he ordered the IRS to not enforce the Johnson Amendment and provided a directive in support of the Little Sisters of the Poor and others like them who've been tied up in years of litigation targeting their religious liberties. For instance, there were 50 cases like this last year alone. So, hey, it's a beginning, and it's a good beginning. You know, really, as people who are involved in ministry, we're not asking for government funding. We're asking for the government to leave us alone and let us do what we do best.
That's it.
And, you know, you look at churches across the country or Christian relief organizations, we're out there doing the work that the government really can't do nearly as effectively as we can do, and using our money far more effectively than the government generally uses it, and helping people, not just telling them about faith, but feeding them and clothing them and housing them and educating them and counseling them and all the things the church does every single day. So all we're saying is, leave us alone and let us do what we do best. And this was a step in that direction. So I appreciated it.
Wasn't that a wonderful moment when President Trump invited the Little Sisters of the Poor to come to the platform. Two of them, two nuns, I guess they were nuns, they were members of the Little Sisters of the Poor, came up there, and there was such an applause. We all stood and cheered because they've been really abused by the Obama administration. I mean, they really have. Those people are doing great work. And there they were, dragged into court all the way through the 10th Circuit and I think on the way to the Supreme Court. That has now gone away for all of us, as I understand it. And my goodness, that warranted coming to Washington, D.C.
Without question. And I mean, really, you know, people talk about optics, about how things appear. Who sues an organization called the Little Sisters of the Poor?
I mean, that is
just so absurd. Here are these sweet nuns standing there with the president, who it seemed to be a spontaneous moment. He said, come on up here. And so they walked up, and I thought, this is wonderful. And so, you know, we rejoice in this. And this is all we're asking, you know, that we just be allowed to do what we feel called to do. And I don't think anyone does more for America than Christian organizations, churches and relief organizations and ministries like Family Talk and Samaritan's Purse and other organizations out there that every day meet people where they're at and provide real help, but always with the eye on wanting to point them to the Savior. Hey, we don't apologize for that. But at the same time, that's not all we do. We do a lot for folks, and we're happy to do it. It's our privilege. Jesus said, if you do it for the least of these, you do it for me. So we do it as an act of worship for the Lord, and we're thrilled to have a president that seems to understand that and wants to remove barriers that have been in our past very recently, up until just months ago, so we can do what I think the church does best.
We're almost out of time, Greg. I do love and appreciate you and your church.
Thanks for inviting me to have this conversation with you, and I just say to the folks that are listening, look, I don't really care if you voted for the president or not. He's been placed there by the Lord. And I would say that about our last president. We're told to pray for those who are in authority. So I think it's time to stop saying he's not my president and acknowledge that those that are in positions of authority have been placed there by God. And we're told to do two things. Number one, to give thanks. And number two, to pray for them, that we may live at peace. There's a lot of things on his plate right now, a lot of tension in the world, from North Korea threatening to nuke us to Iran with their continued development of nuclear weaponry. It's a very uncertain world we're living in. So we need to stop fighting with each other and start working together and praying for our president and praying for God's protection and blessing on the United States of America.
And Greg, I'll close by saying I hope our listeners who know the Lord will be praying for your crusades this summer. They are critically important.
Much.
Okay. God be with you, my friend. Say hello to Kathy for me.
I will, and say hello to Shirley as well, and God bless you.
And that concludes Dr. James Dobson's conversation with pastor, author, and evangelist Greg Laurie on this special edition of Family Talk. Remember the Harvest America event coming up on Sunday, June 11, at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. Musical guests include Mercy Me, Phil Wickham, and Need to Breathe. For more information, you can go to harvestamerica.com, and we have that link on our broadcast page as well at drjamesdobson.org. Please know how much we appreciate your prayers right now for our president, for our nation, and for the Ministry of Family Talk. This program is completely listener-supported, and your faithful and generous donations are greatly needed and deeply appreciated right now. Call toll-free 877-732-6825 to make your tax-deductible donation over the phone. Again, the number to call is 877-732-6825. Or go to drjamesdobson.org and make your contribution using our secure website, drjamesdobson.org. And now for Dr. Dobson and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to join us again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton. Thanks for listening to Family Talk. If you're hurting, you got troubles in your life, going through deep waters, we'd like to talk with you. You can call us toll-free right now, 877-732-6825. That number again, toll-free, 877-732-6825. Or reach us from our website at drjamesdobson.org. We're here to help you.
Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.